Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Caregiving for a loved one who is chronically or terminally ill is an important job. And for people who can't afford or otherwise aren't using paid nursing care, it's also a huge and daunting task. It's one that many of us will be confronted with or already are dealing with as we get older.
But there are also many caregivers who are thrown into the role even as they're still growing up. But little research has been done into the issues facing younger caregivers.
Melinda Cavanaugh is hoping to rectify that. Cavanaugh is an assistant professor of social work at UW-Milwaukee's Helen Bader School of Social Welfare, and she joins us now to talk about what she's learned. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me, Mitch.
Why do you think there aren't more people out there studying children who are caregiving for an ailing parent?
That's an excellent question. I think a lot of it has to do with our perception just broadly as to who caregivers are. We make a lot of assumptions that caregivers are adults. We look at TV. We look at movies. We look at programs, services, and policies. And everything targets adults. So we tend not to even consider kids in the equation.
Well, and the dynamic we usually hear about, right, is the even sometimes middle or older age adult caring for an even older family member. But the people that you're studying are typically on a much younger level.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's also assumptions that if a child is in the home, they're going to do things to help out the parent or the family member in the home. And there's certainly a part of that that's a normative process. Being a part of families, helping out family members, and, you know, not to ignore the, you know, the kind of piece of that that is part of our family structure. But where I am interested in and where other people are starting to understand of some concern is where that stops being part of the normative process and where that starts to really impact the lives of kids, whether it's school, friends, psychological. All of these
childhood, essentially.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, how caregiving influences their ability to just be a kid.
What do we know about how common a situation this is?
It's not something that has been well studied. So it's a tricky answer. In 2005, the only national survey of young carers was conducted. And there's an estimate 1.3, 1.5 million kids in the United States who are caregivers. And it's unclear how accurate that estimate is. You know, what we need to know is more national understanding. So given the fact that this is the only national survey of young carers, more work needs to be done.
Well, and also I would imagine there are major differences when you're talking about issues that a 12 or 13-year-old who's involved in doing this is versus a 17 or 18-year-old.
Absolutely. And it's really important to understand that point right there. And the developmental stage of the child is really important to kind of focus on. You know, a child who is 17 or 18 either has been caregiving for a longer period of time or is at a different stage where they can grasp some of the complex activities and terms and understandings, whereas a younger child is really struggling with being able to grasp some of the complex things that are required of a caregiver.
I would imagine, you know, as long as there have been children living in homes with adults, there have been children who have cared for them. Are we seeing more commonly that this is taking place?
I think we are raising our awareness of it. And one of the avenues for the awareness raising is looking at school outcomes. So there was a study done in 2006 by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation that found that approximately 22% of kids that had to drop out of school did so for caregiving reasons. And if we as a society are really focused on educating our students and really providing them with opportunity and direction, one of the things we need to understand is what is a barrier to that and what are those limitations? And it would behoove us to really get a better grasp of what's going on in the home life that is limiting their school function and performance and ability.
With so much of the evidence out there that's anecdotal, how do you as an academic researcher go after this issue? How do you look for things that are either statistically significant or how are you able to read into one person's experience something that might be a universal?
Well, that's a hard question because if you're dealing with a population where we know so little about and, quite frankly, that are very hard to capture, children in this category, oftentimes called young carers, youth caregivers, aren't exactly open about it. These kids do describe a tremendous amount of stigma and embarrassment and shame. They don't want to be that other weird kid who's doing all of these caregiving tasks rather than going to soccer practice. So one of the avenues that has been useful to kind of understand the experience of these kids is by looking at different health issues and disease states. I've worked in Huntington's disease, and currently now I'm doing a project with the Wisconsin chapter of the ALS Association where I've been interviewing kids about their experience. What is it that this caregiving experience gives to them, positive and negative? And from that, the goal is to be able to say, what supports can we provide? And what do they identify are needs, our supports, our ways that people can acknowledge them and provide for them?
Well, and I think it's easy to imagine the negative or challenging toll that this kind of situation might have on a young person. But what are the positives that do come out of children who are in the role of caregiving?
Absolutely. I have a great one of the kids that I interviewed who spends a lot of time caring for her dad who has ALS. And she points out that while the actual caregiving activities can be stressful and they do take away from her time with her friends, what they give her is more concentrated one-on-one time with her dad, something that she felt even before his diagnosis was missing because we go through so much in our lives. We spend so much time doing all of the things that we often don't take the time to step back and kind of spend time with each other. So there is that value in relationship. There's that value in doing something for each other. And across the interviews that I've conducted with these kids, the majority of them do find some positive. They struggle with the negatives, but they also do find the value in being there for their family member.
There are a handful of associations and some support groups out there, but what sort of support do you hear from these children that they need, and who do they need it from?
Well, one of the main things that they need is they need just to be acknowledged. So schools are a great avenue for that. So rather than if a teacher or a school social worker or someone in a school sees a kid struggling, just ask. It may be something that the child has never brought up because, again, these issues of fear and shame and embarrassment and just feeling very othered at a time in a child's life when what they want most is to be able to belong and connect with their peers. So if you're in a school, really being able to take a step back and say, what's going on with this child? Is caregiving a possibility? What's the home situation? Also, different organizations, whether you're a disease-based organization, whether you're a hospital, whether you're a community organization, reaching out and acknowledging that if I'm going to work with kids, one of the possibilities is that there may be some sort of illness or disability in the home. And what role does that child play? And being able to make connections with that child and other kids like them, helping to normalize their situation. Because really, I think that's key, is letting these kids know that they're not abnormal weirdos, but that they're really normal kids who are just going through an experience that need to be supported.
Or if they are abnormal weirdos, it's not for that reason.
It is true.
Well, and so where is your research going? What are the kinds of questions, as someone who studies this, that you're still asking, that you're still trying to learn about?
So one thing we really want to understand are variations in experiences. You know, so we have some broad questions answered, but understanding specific experiences and the types of supports that can impact those experiences, whether it's caring for types of disorders, types of symptoms, and then what can healthcare do to impact those types of symptoms to then lessen the burden on the child? Also really understanding what's going on in the family context that leads to a child being a caregiver. And there's a lot of information that we don't know about socioeconomic status, culture, neighborhood, you know, things that we could make a lot of assumptions, but we don't have that to say, if they had access to home support, if they had access to better care, if they had access to others to help out with caregiving, would that then lessen the role of the child as the caregiver and then lessen the burden on that child? And hopefully, by extension, improve things like peer support, improve things like school performance, which is, again, something that we're continuing to study but recognize the importance of.
Is there a sense that people are able to live longer with chronic diseases today, that that's playing a role in the need for more kids to be caregivers for their parents or other adults?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. I mean, I think that goes hand in hand with the number of baby boomers that we're seeing kind of age into. You know, a lot of kids are caring for grandparents, and that's going to get even more as we see this baby boomer generation. But also things like, you know, nowadays we understand a disease like cancer to be survivorship from the time of diagnosis. And people are living longer. They're surviving longer. But that doesn't mean that it's always a constant. So there's up and down.
There's more for the kids to not just do but understand.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's another avenue of really important research is what the kids know about the caregiving experience and what they know about their disease, because we often underreport or don't understand enough where kids are at as far as their understanding of the disease and the experience. And so by giving them better education, you know, some of the questions that I've asked kids is how they knew what they needed to do as a caregiver. And the overwhelming majority of them were never trained in any of these things. Some of it comes naturally. Some of it they watched someone do. But, you know, one child said, I wing it. And so I think there's a huge opportunity for us to provide better education for these kids, not only about the disease of their parent, their family member, but just about caregiving.
Well, Melinda Cavanaugh, it's important work. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Thank you so much, Mitch.
Melinda Cavanaugh is an assistant professor of social work at UW-Milwaukee's Helen Bader School of Social Welfare and specializes in issues facing young caregivers.
Coming up next, our On That Note contributor talks about what goes into choosing the right bow for his cello. That's coming up when Lake Effect returns on WUWM.